The Declaration of Independence is a recognition of how all that is a part of our liberty and freedom comes from God. This document also, in a way, gives a job description for every American regarding their role in keeping America faithfully strong. So what's happened over the recent decades? Have we as a people turned away from what was declared and directed to us in the Declaration of Independence? Has it been diminished by those that we've given elected leadership to? Joining us to explore all this and more with his book, Rediscovering the American Covenant, Roadmap to Restore America, is Mark Burrell. How are you today, Mark?
I'm doing great, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for this book that really ties in what too many people are separating. You put them together in a very fluid way. DefendAmericanLiberty.com is Mark's website, and we have that linked at our homepage as well. I want to start off with the title, because I think that's probably just, that alone is raising curiosity with the uninitiated of what you are focusing on in Rediscovering the American Covenant. Explain the use of the word covenant in your context.
Yeah, so I had questions myself on this on the American founding originally, going back to really the 70s and the 80s. And the question was, if the revolution was all about taxation without representation, in other words, they didn't want to pay their taxes, and yet Jesus said you should pay your taxes, for me it was, how could the revolution have been biblically justifiable? So I started this long-term journey, about a 20-year quest, to try and answer that question. And I decided eventually to go and look in the Bible and just start at the beginning and look for information about liberty and justice and rights and governing and what does God expect from the nations. And that's when you first start to learn a whole lot about this word, covenant. There's a bunch of covenants that are clearly expressed. And the one that pertains to this particular topic that's meant to be instructive for all of the nations is what we refer to as the Mosaic Covenant. It was a covenant brokered basically through Moses to the nation of Israel, and it was to make good on another covenant called the Abrahamic Covenant that we learn about in Genesis 12 and Genesis 15. And that covenant, God made an unconditional promise to bless Israel, to bless Abraham, and he promised the nation a great land and to bless the world through Israel, and it was unconditional. But when it came time to make good on that promise about a strong nation, he raised up Moses. And Moses essentially came down and followed a four-step process. And the four-step process was first to acknowledge God and his moral law, so he was bringing down the Ten Commandments. And basically he was saying, hey, listen, God's telling us if we follow this as a nation, as a group of people living together, he'll bless our nation. And if we don't, he'll curse us. So what do you say? Everyone said, we're in. That sounds good to us. And that's where you first see this idea of consent. Then they go on to appeal to God for help. They offer sacrifices. They commit to it. And they declare it by putting up a monument. This all takes place, by the way, in Exodus 19 through 24. And those four steps is basically what you do when you start a nation. It's also what you do when you get married, yeah, which is not a coincidence, because there's a level of seriousness in a marriage commitment. You're exchanging vows. You're acknowledging God. You're appealing to God for help. You're committing to the marriage, and you're declaring it. And that's exactly what the founders did in 1776. In the first couple of paragraphs, they acknowledged God's plan for nations. They referred to the law of nature and of nature's God, which is a direct reference to the law, the moral law, as known through conscience and also as delivered through the Bible in the Ten Commandments. And then they summarize, you know, God's idea of rights, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. They're inalienable. Powers are derived through the consent of the governed. They're, you know, again, referring directly to what happened with Israel. And so later on, they appeal to God for help, that last paragraph. They commit to it, offering their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. And then they declare it. They had it read aloud. And, of course, the name of the document is a declaration. So I decided eventually, after, you know, looking at all this information, I got a lot of coaching from folks because I'd never written a book before. And they all said, you got to get clear on the main story. What's the story you want to tell? And I realized It was about the covenant that started our nation and the fact that we have forgotten it. And so that's where the title came from.
And really, too, as I'm reading through your book, Rediscovering the American Covenant, all this time, if one was thinking that America and Israel wanted to join forces and be loyal toward each other, after everything you just pointed out here, and certainly in Rediscovering the American Covenant, you have to confess and say we were meant to join together and stand together because we have so much of that common ground that you just described in our formation and in our survival.
That's exactly right. In fact, you're the first person to make that strong a connection, because a lot of times what I'm asked is, well, Mark, do you believe that the promises God made to Israel have now been transferred to America? And the answer is no. You're misunderstanding what happened. Was there a unique covenant established through Moses with the nation of Israel where God would bless them if they kept their covenant? And the answer is yes. But it's also true that is a template for any nation in the world who wants to follow to an order to establish a just civil authority in a God-honoring way and be blessed by God. And so it's also true that any country can do this, and what's amazing about America's founding is that our founders followed that template to the letter. And so, yes, we expect to be blessed if we, you know, hold true to our covenant, and we should reach out to other nations who are of like mind and work together to help the other nations understand what it means to be God-honoring, and ideally to help them establish liberty and justice. Ultimately, Chris, so that everyone can go on their own personal faith journey. At the end of the day, this is about evangelism. And so you have a civil authority which allows people to explore their faith without any repercussions from any person or institution. And ideally, they choose Christ. But listen, if you're willing to live in peace with me as my next-door neighbor and, you know, don't take my life, don't steal from me, don't lie, we can live together in harmony and do just fine together while you're figuring things out and while I'm figuring things out.
Talking with Mark Burrell with his book, Rediscovering the American Covenant, Roadmap to Restore America, his website, defendamericanliberty.com. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness. Life and liberty, people have concrete ideas for. Happiness, people make it more of an abstract. With your study, with your research, quantify, qualify that third word, happiness, in the Declaration of Independence. What was the intent of that word?
Yeah, and I really appreciate you asking that question, because I learned over the years that the founders had something much different in mind when they used that term. And in fact, I have a whole chapter on that called The Pursuit of Happiness. And what I learned in going through there first is, if you look at the Bible and you look at verses that talk about following God, and you ask the question, if you follow God as best you can, right? We're all still sinners, but we're hopefully sinning less. And we know that if we follow the Bible as sort of a handbook for life, that life will go better for us. And what will that mean for us? It means we'll be happy. And in fact, if you look at, there's a number of verses that say this directly. I put them in the Bible. There's one in Ecclesiastes. I forget the exact reference, but you can do a concordance on it. But another one is Psalm 119, the longest psalm in the Bible, 176 verses. And essentially, each section of that psalm says, the person saying that, you know, I delight in your law, I meditate on your law day and night, it's my joy and delight. I mean, almost every other verse is saying that. And so what are you to conclude from 176 verses that talk about that? And the answer is that, you know what, if you follow God's law, not to gain his favor or gain approval, it's to honor him and ultimately to have a happy life. And that's exactly what the founders were referring to. And I have a lot of quotes in there to back that statement up, because, of course, the modern definition or the modern point of view is that what the founders meant was sort of eat, drink, and be merry, do whatever makes you feel good. And that's not at all how they thought about it. They saw that the only way to truly be happy is to find favor in the mind of God. Pardon me. And I show that right out of the Noah Webster Dictionary in 1828, which is a very important reference, Chris, because it shows you how the founders defined words back then when they were using them. And that resource also points out that if you want to be happy, follow God as best you can, and your life will go well. So yes, a very important distinction versus what the secular world, and unfortunately many Christians, think that phrase means in our declaration.
And we'll get to that side of the equation too, but when you mentioned Psalm 119, I'm drawing a blank on which signer of the declaration it was, but one of them was actually the creator of one of the first hymnal books, taking all the Psalms and setting it into music, including Psalm 119, which I think was one of being a 60-page hymnal. And hopefully I can remember the name before we're done here, but if not, I'll look it up and get it to you listening, because I don't want to drive you crazy like I'm driving myself crazy right now. But as far as our role as individuals and citizens, the idea of Christian citizenship, what are some of the elements that maybe we've lost touch with, or maybe we've a detachment has been brought about by those we've turned to for everything from education to political leadership, and we've been separated from that idea.
Yeah, and so they say all politics are local, and so let's start with a real local concept. The first thing you need to do to be a good citizen is to be a responsible individual, take responsibility for yourself, seek to live in harmony with the moral law, and again, just focus on, you know, don't murder or hurt anybody, don't steal from anybody, always deal honestly with everybody, and don't covet what other people have. If you can just focus on those four things, you will be doing so much better than a vast majority of Americans living today. But then after you sort of get your own life under control, then it's your family. And one of the interesting things that I learned in this, Chris, is that all of the principles for starting a nation and for governing a nation justly, they all apply to the family. I mentioned marriage a moment ago. Same is true for governing principles. And so one way to think about all these concepts is to think about how would I apply them in the home. In fact, I'm working on a Bible study for that. I've got a couple of churches that are interested in that as an approach to learn this, because it's a more applicable angle to, you know, be able to learn the concepts and apply them directly to your life. And then, of course, once your family's under control, or reasonably under control, I'm not sure any of our families are always totally under control. I know mine's not.
True.
But once you get to a point where, you know, things are somewhat stable, then your responsibility extends to your local community. How can you get involved at the school board, your city council? Those are the areas where you really should be engaged. And I look at churches, and so many of them have hundreds and hundreds of people. There should be at least 5 to 10% of any population in a church that has the spiritual gifts to be able to, you know, administration and leadership and wisdom to be able to serve their fellow citizens, ultimately to help, you know, make sure that there's liberty and justice for everybody. And that's ultimately how you love your neighbor. You protect their rights. And when people see you governing justly, they tend to take notice, and they might tend to ask you about your faith. And by the way, that was the evangelistic strategy God used in the Old Testament. In Deuteronomy 4, Moses told the children of Israel that if you govern justly, the other nations are going to take notice and come out and check you guys out. So it all fits together quite nicely if you follow the biblical blueprint.
Mark does a fantastic job with his book, Rediscovering the American Covenant Roadmap to Restore America. You get the historical background, you get the foundation of faith, and how they must coexist for what was intended on that day in 1776 and the days leading up to it, the events all that were surrounding it all. And maybe you'll also be able to see how and why that detachment I referenced to a moment ago has come about, what your role is to make that reattachment in your life, in your family, in your community, And just a simple concept, too, that if you're questioning how do we serve God best, it's through our service here in this life on earth and how we represent and live his word. You can also find out when you go to defendamericanliberty.com, Mark's services that he provides for churches and seminars, plans, teaching plans, lessons, more information, education about what we've talked about here and what he writes about in Rediscovering the American Covenant, Roadmap to Restore America. Again, his website, defendamericanliberty.com. We have it linked at our homepage as well. Mark Burrell, job well done as a Christian, as a fanatical history nut. You've touched both areas with the respect and the honesty that they deserve, and the way that they are going to be absorbed by everyone who reads your book is going to make a difference. Thanks for doing that and for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Let's do it again soon.